and at any point, please meet your needs. And there's food over there as well. And cake. Jamie got a cake, and the cake says thank you. One of the themes of this meeting is really thank you and an acknowledgement of all the hard work you guys have been putting in over the last 9 months. Yay! All right. Pretty soon we're going to go through the changes that have been made to the SERP in response to the comments that have been submitted over the last couple of, I guess, two weeks, where we are catching up. And then any final thoughts? So, and then some next steps and where we go from here. Any questions about what we're doing tonight? All right, I'm going to turn it over to the Jessicas.
Thank you. All right, well, as she mentioned, my name is Jessica Olson. I'm a program manager with the Valley Air District. And as Crystal said, really the theme of today is to wrap up and certainly say thank you. It's really a huge thanks to the committee members, to the public, to other advocates and stakeholders who have really been here every step of the way to help throughout this process. There have been a lot of meetings and a lot of really carefully thought out comment letters and constructive feedback to the SERP measures. And I really think that it's obvious throughout a lot of the measures that we're going to be discussing today that this is certainly a community developed sort of one of a kind unique document. So you should really be proud. And I think there are a lot of really interesting, unique measures in here that we've never done before as a district. And that truly is reflective of a lot of your significant feedback and desire to improve your community. Today, we're going to be going over what is essentially the final measures for the SERP, which again is sort of that direct reflection of that ongoing feedback, even including a lot of feedback and some tweaks and comments we received only a few short days ago. So all of that should be included in these final measures that we're going to be going over today. And as you'll see throughout the theme of this, this is continuing to be sort of target the main goals of AB 617, which is to get those emissions reductions, to reduce those exposures to the high pollution, then of course to protect public health. And that's shown throughout all of these measures. They reduce over 265 tons of PM2.5, over 1,700 tons of NOx, which of course is a precursor to PM2.5 and ozone, as we've discussed, and then all of the associated air toxics over the project lifetimes for all of these different measures. So again, thank you so much. This is really, really an amazing effort. So just to kind of put into perspective what the goals of today are, tonight is our last meeting before the SERP is due to be published, which is by the end of the day on Thursday, and that's a week ahead of our governing board meeting on the 19th, and we have to sort of publish it ahead of time before we go and take it to that public process. And because this really reflects all of that back and forth that we've been having as a district and as a steering committee and as public members, our goal today is really to sort of get your final input and feedback and support on a lot of these measures. This plan, as I've mentioned, is really impressive and ambitious, and so it's really important for us as we take it to the governing board for the district, who, again, hasn't seen a lot of these same types of measures. They're not very typical of our typical plans. It's going to require a lot of their understanding of sort of where they come from, an understanding of the deliberative process, and really an understanding of the way that this committee and this community support these different types of measures. So it's going to be really important for us to gather that support and understand that support today throughout this meeting. And the hard work isn't over yet. There's so much to be done. This is really just phase one. Phase two is implementation. And so it's also important for us to continue to work with you, for us to continue to work with CARB, and to kind of keep pushing all of these steps forward. So to kind of also iterate sort of their role in that, Karen Maliano of CARB is also going to just say a couple of words a little bit about this final SERP process.
Thanks, Jessica. I also wanted to really reiterate and underscore our appreciation for all of the hard work and dedication that you have spent all in the past year doing this program. You know, I think part of the significance of AB 617 was not only in what we're trying to accomplish through the program, but really how we do it and have that community-driven process. That's something that is new to many of us, and change is hard, and there are growing pains, and I'm sure you will all acknowledge that there were growing pains as part of this process. But we've also, I think, seen a tremendous amount of progress remain. And I hope you all see your community voice in this program. And as we go forward, you know, the CAR board will also be considering this. And I know it's also very valuable and helpful for them to see what that progress is and where you see those core components that you've come together on, while recognizing, you know, everyone is always going to continue to have additional things you'd like to see or see strengthened. You know, Jessica mentioned that it's an iterative process going forward. I think it's been an iterative process getting to this point, and being able to recognize that is really crucial. And, you know, you have our ongoing commitment from CARB to continue to partner with the district and all of you as we move forward into implementation.
Thank you, Karen. Well, as Karen mentioned and as I just went over, we just want to highlight how much of an iterative process this has been. So in addition to all of the feedback we've gotten through various exercises here in this room for the steering committee, we've also received a number of letters, and you've all seen those. They've been emailed out and posted on the community webpage. But these have been letters and comments from steering committee members, which of course includes members of the EJ community, residents, businesses, local government officials. And we've also received comments from the public, so we appreciate all of that, and we hope that you see all of your comments at least addressed, but many, many of them certainly reflected in a lot of these updates that Jess is going to present for us today. So just to kind of go over what the majority of the rest of this presentation is going to be, as I mentioned, these are really those final SERP measures, and they have truly been a reflection of those kind of comments that we've received. A lot of the more recent comments have been recommending more incremental increases or decreases in funding to specific measures, or indicating that there maybe wasn't much support committee-wide for a lot of the measures at all. So you'll certainly see a lot of that reflected in these updates. And while we have discussed sort of the flexibility we have with those funding kind of moving forward, even once the SERP is adopted, there will be some flexibility in sort of prioritization. Maybe if we see that one measure isn't working out for cost effectiveness as much as maybe another committee-supported measure, we'll continue to work with you on those measures. But we also certainly want to reflect your desires and needs ahead of time, and so that's a lot of what you'll see here is that incremental change in funding that you have requested. And the draft SERP update that we posted last Friday does include a lot of these measures, and then some of them are even more recent than that. So again, thank you for your recent comments and your recent work. And so with that, I'm going to kick it off by tossing it over to Jessica Coria, and she is going to go over measure by measure all of those changes that we've made.
Thanks, Jess. And so like Jess said, these updates are included in the chapter SERP update that was emailed out to the committee. That has a little bit more detail than these slides do. So you can always reference that document, but we'll be providing some more information during this presentation. We'll also be breaking for questions and feedback after every few slides. So if you have a question about a specific slide, feel free to raise your hand and Crystal will help us get those addressed. John, question to start off with, maybe?
Okay. Is on the table slightly different than the last one that was emailed?
No, the one that was emailed out is the current version.
Gustavo had sent some comments subsequent to this. They're not in the
one. So they'll be addressed in this presentation. Definitely. Yep. All right, so to kick us off, I'm going to talk about increased funding for electric vehicle incentives, which is measure C2. Which I was already on. So we received committee comments that incentives for EVs should be increased. So we have increased those per the committee suggestions from the originally proposed $725,000 to $6 million. That's going to fund approximately 300 electric or plug-in electric hybrids at an incentive amount of about $22,500 per car. It's going to be funding to help address the lack of availability of the federal tax credits to low-income residents, as well as to help support the installation of residential charging infrastructure. Speaking of charging infrastructure, we're going to talk about EV charging infrastructure in the community. So we received community feedback that funding should be provided for both Level 2 and Level 3 EV chargers in and around Shafter. So per those committee comments, we've increased the funding for this measure from $100,000 to $850,000, which will fund approximately 78 Level 2 and Level 3 chargers. which will be installed at interested schools, businesses, and other public locations. This brings us to electric school buses. We definitely heard from the committee a lot of support for this measure. We talked about this at the last meeting, but we have increased the goal from 8 buses to replacing 8 or replacing 10 older high-polluting diesel buses in and around Shafter with targeted outreach to Maple School and Rio Bravo School. The funding for this measure has been increased to $4 million to fund approximately $400,000 per bus. Speaking of schools, moving on to school filtration systems, we also heard committee-wide support for funding the installation of advanced school filtration units at all Shafter schools. So we will be reaching out to schools in and around the Shafter community, and we think that the $250,000 will fund the complete upgrade. Based on programs in other regions, we've found that that program takes about $25,000 per school to effectively implement. And so that's where this funding amount was based on, and kind of bring it back to that funding flexibility we talked about before. If we find that we need to allocate more funding for this program, we have the flexibility to do that. So we'll be working with the steering committee and the community on that going forward. So with that, I'll stop for questions if anybody has any on this first couple of slides.
All right. So anything around electric vehicles, electric charging stations, electric school buses, or school filtration?
Hi, Vince Saragosa. On your last statement about reaching out to schools in the Shafter community, mm-hmm. which schools are that? Are they only within the city of Shafter, or are they outside the city of Shafter as well? Because there's quite a bit outside the city of Shafter.
Absolutely. So both in and around the community.
So are you looking at 6, 7, 8, 10 schools?
Up to 10.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. But they will be identified, right?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Thank you. Any other thoughts or reactions to these first 4 changes?
On the EV charging stations in the community, I was just wondering who's going to end up paying for the electric. I'm assuming probably the businesses and schools. So is there a need for more solar to those businesses and schools, if that could be allocated? In regards to the buses, we had included Maple and Rio Bravo. Will Shafter schools have first priority over them? And are we sure that those schools bus out of Shafter? One more thing on the filtration systems. I know we talked about the schools, which is wonderful. I was wondering if that would be extended to possibly Shafter Youth Center, where children are in after-school programs, and possibly Senior Center as well.
We're going to let Todd DeYoung, who's our Director of Grants and Incentives, answer a couple of those questions.
Sure. I can start with who's going to pay for the electricity. And it really depends on the situation. In a lot of cases, the companies that come in and install the chargers, they can develop rate schedules. And it's really dependent on how those sort of agreements are designed. A lot of times they're made free to the public, and they're picked up by the organization. If it's put in by a business, they'll cover it. School districts can sometimes cover those. But the suggestion of an increase in solar to accommodate some of that's it's definitely a good suggestion.
The buses to Maple and RBG will Shafter.
For the school bus funding, I think we're definitely going to prioritize the buses in Shafter that operate the majority of their time in Shafter. But then there are those school districts and those bus routes that occur some of their time in Shafter and some of the time in the surrounding areas, and they'll definitely be targeted as well.
Oh, the filtration systems, we talked about it being in the schools, but what about Shafter Youth Center, where there's after-school kid programs, and then also the Senior Center?
Yeah, and that's another great suggestion, and I think we've heard that suggestion before, and I think what we're going to do is we're going to start in the schools as sort of a pilot for this program, and then in future years, see if there's things that we can do to expand that the filter program into other areas of the community.
Right. Really targeting the sensitive receptors. Any other questions on these first 4, Gustavo?
Yeah, I just have a quick question on the school filtration systems. Has there been like an entity that has been identified that will support like the filtration? I know there's a foundation called IQ Air. They're out of Southern California, And I know they have in the past done funding through like SEP policy proposals in addition to like receiving these kind of funding. So maybe organizations like that would be useful.
It's a great suggestion.
It's a good note.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Can we move forward? All right.
All right, guys. So jumping into, speaking of solar, jumping into solar deployment in Shafter, we received kind of across the board support for solar in Shafter. And we did Gustavo's recent comments kind of called specific attention to electric appliance funding as well. So this measure is going to be kind of a combined strategy where the state and district funding would total $15 million for residential solar in Shafter. The district will provide up to a $1.5 million match, which would be 10% of the state funding provided for this program. And so this would leverage both new CARB, PUC, and CEC programs to provide incentives for the solar installation, which will be through DACSASH, DACGT, and other programs, which I'm going to cover in more detail on the next slide. But as well, it will help incentivize the installation of zero and near zero emission appliances through the CPUC programs, Build, Tech, and other developing programs. So Build and Tech, we haven't talked about before. Those programs are being implemented under SB 1477. They target GHG emissions with an annual budget of $50 million per year from 2019-2020 through 2022-23. They're going to provide funding for clean heating technologies, electric space, and water heat pumps, solar hot water with electric backup installations, and heat pump dryers, as well as induction cooktops. They're also providing a targeted $6 million of funding per year for disadvantaged communities, kind of specifically targeted to hitting those low-income communities. So for retrofits, they're going to incentivize retrofits for low-income, and then they're also going to cover the installation costs in disadvantaged communities. So we really have quite a bit of state funding available to help hit on some of the committee comments that electrification of home appliances should also be covered under this program. The district's going to be convening a community meeting with PG&E and community partners to discuss available resources and potential strategies. And so this is a program, again, moving into the implementation phase of the SERP. We'll be really excited to partner with both the community and other agencies to bring these resources to Shafter. So focusing a little bit on the specific solar programs that Shafter residents could qualify for, we have DACSASH, which provides upfront financial incentives for the installation of rooftop solar generating systems for income-qualified owners of single-family homes in disadvantaged communities. So this has an annual budget of $10 million from 2019 through 2030. The SOMA program is administered by a nonprofit. They have a $100 million annual budget and a goal of installing 300 megawatts by 2030. We also have DACGT, which I have a really hard time saying for some reason, but that program provides 100% renewable energy on behalf of customers while also providing a 20% discount. Similarly, the Community Solar Green Tariff sources renewable energy and provides a 20% rate reduction. So we have a significant state resources, and we're hoping to leverage those state resources in combination with the district match funding of $1.5 million to bring those resources to Shafter for solar. Any questions about the solar program while we're here? John?
And so administering and pulling all of that together is going to take a lot of work and a lot of coordination. And is that, so it's not just the district's programs, it's going to take someone to help families assemble all of that, all the applications, make sure that everything's done according to the rules. The district going to do that? When you say partnering with everyone, it takes someone to sort of be the facilitator to pull that all together.
Yeah, certainly. And I think that's going to be part of when we bring those partners into this room or into whichever room we decide to meet and have that sort of work group, that'll be part of it, is how do we make sure that we continue to communicate how to get all of that stuff together and work through how we, you know, make sure that everyone has everything that they need. And so that includes us being a big part of that, but also working with those partners. So it's not just going to be a district run thing, but we are committing to be the facilitators for it. So we will make sure that it all occurs and happens. And that'll be a lot of the feedback that we'll need from this committee is, you know, we're not seeing a lot of people taking advantage of these programs, even though you've brought this group together. So maybe we need to rethink exactly how we're targeting that. So that'll be a lot of the feedback we'll need from everyone here.
Well, and just to jump in, everyone here could help increase that outreach and education about these programs into your neighbors and friends and really amplify that message. So there's a role. I'm going to go Tom and then back to John.
Yeah, just to clarify, you say $1.5 million in district funding. That's money out of the $38 million for the CERT. Okay. Okay, I have to think about that.
Thanks, Tom. Okay, any others after John before we move on?
Well, in my experience has been that there's a lot of resources, but especially when you're helping families that aren't used to doing these kinds of things, it takes a lot of, and I don't, probably hand-holding is the wrong word, but at the same time, it takes a lot of assistance to make sure that all the pieces come together successfully. So that's not a small task. That's a very, very big task. And I'm assuming that that's going to fall in the districts.
Right. And okay. And something I will say is, and maybe depending on how familiar you are with a lot of the incentives programs we do administer, but we do a lot of that with our incentive programs now. There's a lot of requirements, and we do sort of that handholding. That's a lot of the service that we do provide, is making sure we follow up with people and get all of the, you know, sort of documents and such that they need.
Well, that'll be critical for it to be a success. But that brings me to my next question. If a program, how long do we have to spend this money? I mean, throughout the program. I'm assuming it's not there forever. And are there provisions for this committee to stay in or stay active and to be able to make adjustments if certain funds are not being spent in certain areas?
That's a great question, and it's not a straightforward one to answer. So this in every year's funding, so with each funding amount that we get from the state to support AB 617, there is a deadline to have that funding expended. So, for instance, the funding that we're talking about, I think, has to be expended by 2022, means paid out projects on the ground. What we're all going to be doing over the next several years is we're going to be working very hard to secure the next year's funding and the next year's funding. And so those will have progressively longer deadlines. But we are going to have to make some decisions when it gets down to it. If some of these programs are taking longer than necessary to get off the ground, we are going to have to think about maybe shifting some of those funds at some point to some of these projects, some of these programs that can get done maybe within that time frame to meet those expenditure deadlines and that are set out by the legislation to spend those funds.
And to answer the second part of your question, this is the last steering committee meeting before the SERP is adopted. This is certainly not the last steering committee meeting. We're going to continue to be able to meet not only to update you on the SERP, but also, like I mentioned earlier, not get your feedback on the individual measures, get your feedback on maybe prioritization when it does come to spending that money. Maybe there's certain things we want to spend now before you know, we have to kind of think about the next round of funding. So that'll all be critical for this committee.
And to that, if there's a program where we see, you know, lacking interest and we need to reallocate that funding, that is something that we can definitely do with the input of the steering committee moving forward.
But this amount of money we have to have spent in 5 years. What's here has to be spent in 5 years. And then there's a reallocation of money. Has that reallocation of money come to Shafter, or is that to the AB 617 program there?
And I think that's sort of our next step is what are the priorities going to be? What do we want to prioritize first? And those are some of the things we're starting to work on now. And then the community input will be extremely valuable when we get into, okay, yeah, we have 5 years, we have a plan, and then we have a certain amount of money right now. You know, what are the things that we can get off the ground quickly? What are the things that are of most interest to the community to get done quickly? And then we can make sure that those are prioritized. And then as we work through over the next 5 years, with the funding that's available over those next 5 years, we continue to make those decisions on funding priorities and then adjustments that need to occur at that time. But again, it's going to be an ongoing process throughout the next 5 years.
So at the end of 5 years, if there's $20 million left, does that get to stay here or does that go someplace else?
Well, our hope obviously would that there wouldn't be $20 million left. That I can't answer that question at this point. Typically, if grants go unspent from the state, they do have to be returned, but that's never happened in our district. We would make sure that all of the funding can be spent and we can prioritize the projects that are of most interest to the community along the way.
Okay, these are excellent questions, but we're going to move on to ag pump electrification.
All right, so this measure was adjusted in response to additional steering committee feedback that our existing incentive program be expanded to allow natural gas pumps to also be incentivized and replaced with electric units. So we are in Shafter going to make that adjustment and allow agricultural operations to electrify their natural gas ag pumps. Moving into measures that we received strong committee feedback that there was a lack of support for. One of those measures was for a clean engine locomotive technology. We received feedback from community members that they did not support funding for clean engine technology locomotives, as the source may operate outside of the Shafter community. So we removed the funding for the HG6, which is clean engine locomotives, but we did keep the proposed funding of $4,100,000 for clean engine technology rail car movers and switchers, which is measure HD7 in the SERP. And this is because these operate locally, and they are also large emitters of both NOx, which is a PM2.5 precursor, as well as PM2.5 in the form of diesel particulate, which is a toxic air contaminant, and it's associated with increased cancer risk. So we did keep that measure with the full funding amount, but we eliminated the funding for HD6. Similarly, for heavy-duty truck replacements, we received feedback that the funding for this measure should be reduced from the initially proposed $6 million. So we reduced that amount to $4 million with the goal of replacing 40 heavy-duty trucks that operate in and around the community of Shafter. And again, this project specifically, it's very cost-effective and reduces that diesel particulate, which is a cancer-causing toxic air contaminant. Similarly, for zero-emission yard trucks and TRUs, we received feedback that the initially proposed $4 million should be reduced for this to only target two units at a local almond hauler. So we reduced the funding from the $4 million to $1.5 million with a goal of replacing 10 units that operate in or around Shafter. We will be providing specific outreach to the facilities identified by the steering committee to see if they're interested in taking advantage of this voluntary incentive funding amount. So yard trucks are equipment that operate kind of at distribution centers or local businesses. TRUs are truck refrigeration units, which are the cooling units on heavy-duty trucks, so Class 7 or Class 8 trucks, and they keep cold boxes on the back of trucks cool, but they're also small diesel engines that emit large amounts. They're usually not subject to the same kind of stringent regulations as might be required in a truck engine, so they can be higher polluting, and large amounts of idling are associated with these units quite a lot of the time. So we did feel like this measure would target local emission reductions, and so we did want to keep that goal of 10 units for operations in and around Shafter.
Okay, so any thoughts on the ag pump, the locomotive, the heavy-duty truck, or the zero-emission yard trucks?
I had a question on the heavy-duty truck replacements. What are you replacing them with, CNG?
We would be targeting the ultra-low NOx CNG, which is the 0.02 gram, or it's called near-zero-emission technology. So it's the latest generation of natural gas. Obviously, where electric works, we would also prioritize electric trucks in those situations. But we feel probably the most replacements would go to this ultra-low NOx natural gas.
So I've noticed that we used to have in the SERP two fast-fill CNGs, and it was reduced to possibly one, and now possibly taking that out. We are a very big export area with all the farming we have here, and from what I understand, the electric heavy long-haul trucks, the technology just isn't there yet. And so CNG is possibly a better alternative for cleaner air. So I just hope that maybe we could put more funding towards the heavy truck and possibly a fast fill station for these trucks to promote people, truck drivers, export, anyone coming into Shafter to use these cleaner burning systems, just because the electric isn't there yet. It's going to take some time.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. And to that point, yeah, you're 100% right. You do need the fueling infrastructure to support a large deployment of these vehicles in the area.
So relatively speaking, money invested in converting the heavy-duty trucks, NOx emission reductions or emission reductions, where do you get the biggest bang for the buck, there or electric cars?
Generally speaking, when you're replacing heavy-duty diesel equipment with either cleaner diesel or even better, this ultra-low NOx natural gas, that's where you're going to see the largest bang for your buck.
So is it too late to have some, still have some adjustment in you?
I think at this point, I think we're to a point where we have to take the SERP to the board and but you know, we're always willing to take input.
And I think this goes back to something Jess mentioned, and this can be similar for this exact. It's not just pertaining to the school filtration systems, but if we are struggling to find cost-effective projects in some of these other measures, and there are a ton of cost-effective heavy-duty truck projects that are operating exclusively in Shafter, and you know it's a high priority for the steering committee, we can continue to talk with the steering committee throughout this process and see if we can shift funds over for that.
I see the comment. So just as a reminder, I mean, this is the SERP, this is the version of the SERP, correct me if I'm wrong, that will go to the governing board, but comments are being captured, and this is a continuing process. So I know you got another thought, but keep it going.
Yeah. How are you measuring, you talked about air toxic contaminants. How are you measuring it, based on the monitoring you've done or just research that?
So when you're talking about the replacement of like diesel equipment, we have established methodologies that have been developed by the Air Resources Board and EPA. There are specific emission factors that are associated with heavy-duty diesel engines. Every diesel engine is certified to a particular emission level. And so when you're talking about replacing it, you're talking about going from one emission level to a much lower emission level. And those are certified by the Air Resources Board, those engine certifications. It's a very robust process so that they have to go through to get those certifications. So you're essentially taking the emission factor from an old engine down to a new engine and taking and calculating out that benefit over a given period of time.
Okay. And I keep seeing numbers allocated and all that. What is the specific number that is going to be given out to Shafter? By the air district and by CARB, because we haven't really gone in depth like how much money is going to be allocated here. You're just rounding up numbers like for allocating, but not in reality. We don't know how much funding is going to be available.
So we're at about $38 million total investment in Shafter, but keep in mind it's not like one bucket that's kind of being handed over to the community of Shafter. We're sourcing that from a lot of different areas and trying to direct district resources to the community of Shafter to achieve those emission reductions as effectively as possible. So if we were only taking the funding available from AV617 and directing it to Shafter, it would be a much lower amount. But we're also committing to leverage quite a bit of district funding from other programs and bring that funding to the community as well. So think about it as we're directing AV617 funding that's available to Shafter because of the community selection by CARB, but that's also prioritizing the community for these projects like truck replacements or the EV program, things like that where we, the ag pump replacement program, things like that where we have existing district programs and we're going to be routing our funding to the community for that as well.
So the Air District already has diesel truck replacement programs, right? The district already does this. It's an ongoing program. So, and I'm not sure how many millions of dollars are allocated to that ongoing program already, but it's valley-wide. Here is another $4 million. How do you ensure that Shafter continues to receive the money from the ongoing valley-wide program plus the extra $4 million? How do you ensure that is extra money spent just in Shafter when you have a program that, because I see this $4 million as just being blended into the already ongoing valley-wide program, because I haven't heard how you make sure it's spent only in Shafter, plus Shafter can still be eligible for the other money.
And that's a good question. So, you know, most of our programs at the Air District are oversubscribed. And so for the extent of this $4 million, we would ensure that that $4 million goes specifically to trucks that operate in and around the Shafter area. You're absolutely right. The more broad valley-wide program is absolutely still available to trucks that operate in and around Shafter, but the $4 million would be specifically targeted for those trucks in and amongst an already highly competitive program.
Okay, any final questions before we move to dairy truck replacements? Good.
All right, and so continuing to talk a little bit about trucks, we did receive comments from committee members that they did not recommend the inclusion of funding for dairy truck replacement, so we have eliminated the funding for Measure A7, and that measure is deleted from the proposed SERP. Similarly, we received feedback from committee members that they did not support the inclusion of dairy digesters as a part of the SERP. So Measure A8 has been deleted from the proposed SERP. We received feedback from committee members that the proposed funding for the installation of commercial charbroiling control units at commercial restaurants should be cut from the proposed $300,000, which could fund 1 to 2 restaurants. And so we have cut that funding from $300,000 down to $150,000 with the goal of installing control equipment at one Shafter restaurant. And then my final point before I break for questions again is that we did receive feedback from community members that funding for electric dairy feed mixing equipment, which is kind of a slew of different equipment at dairies in and around Shafter, that funding should be cut from $6.5 million to $3.9 million. Oh, I'm sorry. So that was our original proposal. So we received pretty strong feedback from some committee members that we eliminate this funding. We had originally proposed to cut it from $6.5 million to $3.9 million, which we discussed at our last committee meeting. But between that last meeting and this meeting, we received additional comments, and so we have deleted this funding and reallocated the funding to other community-identified priorities, which I'm going to discuss in the next set of slides. So I'll break there for comments and questions.
John, you've got some, and then I'm going to go to Linda. Okay, dairies or charbroiling?
Dairies. So when you point out the ones that that money went to, the total amount of emission reduction is the same? Which gave us the most?
The dairy feed mixing equipment is a very cost-effective program.
I maybe want to discuss that then a little bit.
My question's on the dairy digester. So at the beginning of these meetings, there was a lot of talk about the air pollutants that the dairies give out. So I'm just a little concerned that this has completely been wiped out. If we can do what this says to do, where we can reduce the pollutants and the methanes and possibly get renewable gas, I mean, is that something that fills CNG trucks, that we can pull it out of the air and make it useful and promote cleaner running vehicles in Shafter?
Yes, yeah, and absolutely. And that's a big part of what the state program is designed to do. Keep in mind, so we are proposing to remove it from the SERP, but keep in mind these programs are still available through the state. So what the original measure was designed to do was the district was committing to provide targeted outreach to dairies in and around Shafter to hopefully provide some input on the design of dairy digesters and try to make sure that those weren't going to result in increased emissions of criteria pollutants, which depending on the kind of design of the dairy digester, it can increase criteria pollutants while still capturing the gases. But you can design it to be a lot cleaner where you kind of get it ready for pipeline injection and create that renewable gas resource. So we won't be committing to that in the CERT because of the strong feedback we heard from some of the committee members, but the state still provides that program. So it is still a program that's available to local dairies.
Do we know roughly how much a dairy digester costs?
It's in the millions. It's millions, yeah, definitely. And so those programs are administered by CDFA, and so you can check out their website.
If you go to the California Climate Investments website, you'll see them there listed. Mm-hmm. Before I go to John, hi. Any other thoughts from anyone who hasn't spoken yet? Anyone in the back? Throw no bad questions. No? Oh, we got one, Sal.
Just being rhetorical here, but I just want to make sure I understand. So the dairies are not going away from Shafter. The dairies are not going to get any incentive or help to reduce their methane. So the methane is going to continue to be released into the air around Shafter.
Right. Well, so it's not going to be included as a measure or a metric in the CERT. Like I said, those programs are still going to be available through CDFA and through the state, and hopefully, you know, the local dairies can leverage that funding.
And that includes all of the measures, as Tom mentioned earlier. All of our district incentives measures are still available for everyone in the valley. So,
being a 6117 community, can we leverage that just as getting a little bit higher priority with the state? Can we include that in the CERP that says, hey, look, we're a 617 community and put us at the top of the list for these programs?
I think we can certainly do that for all. And that'll be, there is actually a measure in here, Jess might go over this in a second. There's a measure in here that talks about leveraging all state funding for 617 and kind of partnering with all of our local agencies, state agencies, you as sort of outreach community members to advocate for all sorts of funding because of that. So that's certainly something that's already in the CERP as 03, I believe. So that's a measure on and of itself.
Actually, this one is a little bit of a sore spot with me because I thought the purpose of 617 was exactly this, that there are businesses or industries such as dairies or big, you know, freight yards or something that are living within the rules and are putting out an emission that is impacting a lower income community, and you could incentivize them somehow to actually reduce that. That seems like that's what this would do, and maybe be more on point with the purpose of AB 617 than some of the ones that we're actually recommending. So I see nodding. I'm assuming that you're agreeing.
That is a goal of 617. Another goal of 617 is to sort of survey the community and listen to the whole community, the committee feedback, and just sort of, I mean, you've been to all the meetings as well, and just kind of reading all the letters and seeing all the meetings. And so, it's a give and take of all of these different things and trying to work together to find some common ground. There's going to be some measures that we all support. There's going to be some measures that some groups support and some measures that not everyone supports. Our goal today is just to see, and certainly we're taking these down, as to see, you know, who supports what and how much of these are really fully supported by the committee and how much of these might still be sticking points we have to figure out kind of through the implementation.
And just to reiterate, there are other district programs or other state programs that are available to do exactly what you're talking about, and we are going to, you know, we are going to engage with the dairies certainly still in this area to see if they want to take advantage of those other, you know, those programs that are already available at the district level and the state level.
Yeah.
Just to clarify, methane does not harm our health. Methane emissions is not directly, as a greenhouse gas, it ultimately will. But we're talking about air pollution. And Sal, you brought it up, but methane is not an air pollutant. The air district does not regulate methane as an air pollutant. So dairy digesters actually will increase our local air pollution while they collect methane, and they're not decreasing anything. So why would we in this committee want to give money or even support dairy digesters? It doesn't make any sense. It's just a dumb subsidy to an industry that's totally unsustainable and needs to change and should be regulated. But that's the deal with methane. It's not an air pollutant.
Okay. Right now, I really want to focus us on the changes that are being made in the SERP so we can get through this, just because I don't want to go over in time. I see a lot of energy and passion around this and different points of view, and that's great. We're just going to keep going, and then we're going to continue this conversation as we move through the process. Jessica.
Awesome. So I'm going to stop talking about things that we have cut the funding for and start talking about what we are increasing the funding for based on feedback that we've heard from the steering committee. So the first thing I want to talk to you about is increasing the funding for the car share program. We received really strong support for this from committee members, and back on August 26th, we talked about increasing the funding for this measure from $250,000 to $300,000. We received feedback that because of the low-income communities in and around Shafter, the ridership costs that are pretty standard for these types of programs might be too high for low-income residents to take advantage of. Some hearing committee members recommended increasing the funding to help further subsidize those ridership costs. And so we have increased the funding from the originally proposed $250,000 to $500,000 to support the launch of a car share program like MioCar or Green Commuter and help to offset those ridership costs. We received a lot of community support for urban greening. We had originally proposed to support kind of available state resources and try to leverage those and bring them to the community, but we received feedback from community members that there should be direct funding included in the SERP for this. So we have included $250,000 for urban greening projects, including both planting and maintenance, with a district 20% funding match up to $50,000. We will also be providing $5,000 for a study by San Joaquin Green, which is also known as Tree Fresno, and a partnership with the Tree Foundation of Kern to identify planting locations and develop irrigation plans. With those partners and with the support of the community and the steering committee, we will be working to leverage the available state funding that's included in the state budget through the Natural Resources Agency, Caltrans, and other agencies like through the California Climate Investments. There's quite a bit of funding available, and we'll be working to bring that available state funding to Shafter. Moving on to a new measure, this is included as LU5. We're going to be providing funding for bicycle lanes. A lot of the suggestions we heard from the committee included suggestions for increasing connectivity in the community, especially for outlying areas or low-income neighborhoods. And so this was a suggestion we recently received and we've talked with the city about. So we'll be providing $1 million to support the city of Shafter efforts to implement bicycle lanes and connect residential areas with schools, shopping, and public centers. Additionally, we heard from the community that funding from road paving, sidewalk installations, and projects that reduce vehicle miles traveled in the community was a really high priority. We've been collaborating with the Kern County Public Works Department, the City of Shafter, and Kern County Planning Department. And what we've committed to do is allocate $2,775,000 to leverage available local, state, and federal funding for the installation of sidewalks, road paving efforts, and other projects that can reduce vehicle miles traveled in and around the community. So things like connecting Apple Market to low-income areas and making that kind of road a little bit more public friendly for people that have to walk. Things like paving roads in those low-income Mexican colony areas, providing increased street infrastructure, street lighting, curbage, sidewalks, those are all projects that maybe might not be cost effective without a district funding match, but this $2 million can be leveraged to make those projects more cost effective and help bring that funding to Shafter. So that's what this measure is designed to do. My last update is about new state pesticide commitments. So DPR released measures to reduce community exposure to pesticides. That was included as an attachment to the SERP update. CARB and DPR have committed to ongoing and expanded monitoring in the community. And the most recent addition is that the district has committed $250,000 in the SERP for notification system funding. So the district will allocate $125,000 and CARB and DPR will commit $125,000 to support the funding of a pilot notification system in Shafter. This is a really important update. I know this has been a really high priority item for the steering committee members, so we're really excited about this partnership. And we're gonna hear from DPR for a little bit more details about this.
Hello, I'm Edgar Vidrio. I am from the California Department of Pesticide Regulation, and I've been asked to kind of expand a little bit on this slide. So basically, as you see here, and I think I mentioned during my last talk about 2 weeks ago, that the Department of Pesticide Regulation is committed to exploring basically a pesticide notification system, provided the funding was made available. As I mentioned before, and I want to kind of clarified a few points here, is that unlike the other ARB, their district, DPR did not get any AB 617 funding, which was kind of important in order to actually go into this effort. So one thing kind of to clear on this is, although it here says that CARB and DPR will commit to $125,000, again, because there's no AB 617 funding, DPR will continue to work with our partners to explore additional sources of funding in order to for this effort. Depending on the identification of new sources, the district's allocation of the $125,000 may be used as a seed money for a pesticide notification system. We are committed to working with the community here and the committee to kind of define the scope of the notification system, as well as to make sure that whatever system is actually deployed works for the community itself. Thank you.
Any questions for Edgar or any CARB additions before we, or any other comments on the other new measures I saw here and then here?
Good evening. On the car share program, I've been involved with the MEO car project, so I just have a couple of questions. I know this is kind of a preliminary thing, so you may not have thought out. Do you know if this would be like through an RFP or through some other method?
It would likely be through an RFP. We would want to partner with the most appropriate agency or entity to operate something like this. Yeah. Okay.
And then what MEOCAR did was that's about the right budget, $500,000, but they installed charging stations at low-income housing to support the use of electric vehicles in the car share program. So would that $500,000 be able to be used for installing infrastructure, or would they have to use some of that other funding for EV infrastructure?
It certainly could be used to install some infrastructure. Again, as we develop the program, we'll find out what the needs of the community are. There is quite a bit of additional funding allocated in the SERP for EV infrastructure. So to the extent that we can leverage some of those dollars to support the car share program, we would look to do that. But if there's a need for specific charging to support the car sharing program, we can absolutely look at that.
Yep. My suggestion would be to keep it together because it just smooths the whole process rather than waiting two different grants, two different cycles. In the MEO car project, it's only a car share program, and they just received a grant to expand that to ride hailing. So here you're talking about a car share program, but would you also be expanding that to a ride hailing program?
Certainly a possibility. We were kind of starting with the car share concept, but if it, okay. It's that natural progression of that project into a hailing service where you could more effectively connect riders with cars, then that's something we could certainly look at.
Okay, and then my last question was, right now the only larger vehicles, like vans, the only vehicle out there right now is a Chrysler Pacifica, so that's just a note about if you're, you know, wanting to travel with more people in a car, you're going to possibly have to be open to a hybrid until we get those electric cars on the road.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's really helpful to have people in the background who know so much about car shares. Okay.
Thank you. Is it Edgar? Yeah. Thanks for being here from the state. Two questions. One has to do with the proposed update measure. It has to do with the expanded monitoring system. You had mentioned there'll be a notification system in place, and it'll be a district and CARB and DPR. Is this going to be a notification system for if there's a pesticide spray drift incident, or is it going to be a notification that there's going to be pesticide sprayed before it actually happens?
Yeah, so essentially what, depending on what works for, I think we'll, let me rephrase that. DPR and with our partners, CARB and the Air District, as well as the County Agriculture Commissioner Office, the idea is for the community to kind of, depending on the funding, depending we narrow down the scope of what the notification system could be. I think that's up in the air in determining of what it actually looks like at the once it's done. But the idea is to notify of applications. What those applications are or what the scope is, if it's only fumigants, if it's only restricted materials, if it's every pesticide that's applied, that's going to be up to the feasibility of the system that we have in place, the funding that's available to deploy that system, as well as what is the input from the community. Because we want to make sure that if a notification system is actually deployed, that it actually works for the community. That is what the community is actually asking for.
I have a follow-up question. This has to do with a statewide new rule from DPR, and it, in a way, is partly informational with the restriction, but there's a monitoring component. So I'm just wondering how that is working statewide. And just to kind of FYI, Shafter has about a dozen schools, plus or minus, maybe 8 to 10, within the downtown. So DPR has established a new rule that has a statewide pesticide buffer zone around public schools and daycare centers, and the regulation prohibits that there be any drift-prone application methods, including fumigation, aerial, ground, air blast, sprinkler, and dust applications of pesticides on fields within a quarter mile of a school property between the hours of 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. That'd be Monday through Friday. It also says growers are now required to provide schools with an annual list of pesticides planned for use within a quarter mile. And there are additional restrictions on fumigant pesticides which can't be used within a 36-hour period before a school day. So that's, in a way, is a monitoring system. Is DPR monitoring the monitoring system? Is it working? How do you know that this rule is being complied with or enforced, not only statewide, but particularly the Shafter area?
So that notification system that you just mentioned went into effect January 1st of this year. And essentially, it's a once-a-year notification process where the growers that have agricultural lands within a quarter of a mile of a school are required to report to the county agriculture commissioner, and as well as to the schools within that area, a list of all pesticides that they believe they will apply within that year. So it's not really a monitoring system that's in place. It's more of a notification system to the school.
Yes, the question is, is it being done?
Yes, yes.
There is
a Cal School Notify website,
okay,
that the county agriculture commissioners as well as the school administrators have access to. So that is a kind of way of tracking.
It would be nice if that was made more available to folks. I would like to know where it's at on the internet. I guess what I'm trying to say is that anytime there's a legislation or a pre-monitoring program, it'd be nice to know. Of course, it hasn't been a full year. What is the report card on that? Is it actually working? But if you could maybe share that with someone so we can know what site that is so we can look at it, I'd be appreciative. Thanks, Edgar.
Yeah.
This is a really important topic. I want to let CARB weigh in as well.
I just wanted to say, you know, we know this is a priority for this community, and so we'll be working closely with DPR to help identify the funding that would be needed to do this and continue to work together with the community on this. And it probably really just also highlights, you know, our commitment to an ongoing role of working with other state agencies, other state programs to help bring those resources to this community. You know, you've talked a lot about PUC and CEC resources, and so we really strongly want to continue to help support this community at the state level, too.
There's a whole lot of money in the cap and trade fund. All right, Linda, and then Bianca, and then Gustavo.
I just wanted to thank you for your urban greening and the funding for the road and paving. I would like to possibly see even more funding, if possible. Thank you so much for considering the area between, what is it, West Tulare to English to do the sidewalks. A recommendation I would make is to possibly put in trees and shrubs, because a lot of those homes, their front door, their windows, their AC units are right by 43, and all those emissions 24 hours a day are probably going into their homes. Also trees possibly to go to schools and at Veterans Park. There's a very scarce amount of trees there. The playground equipment gets too hot for the children, so that's already on sprinkler systems. There's grass, so offering it to them. The other thing, if we're on funding for roads, the south end of town where Beach, 43, Central Valley all comes in Los Angeles, it is a real big mess. To possibly get a roundabout, maybe at least two lanes, get some turn lanes in there to keep traffic moving. There's a lot of congestion in the morning with people going to work and school. It backs all the way up on Los Angeles, and I've even seen it in the afternoon where it's backing up from that stop sign all the way up to Laredo Highway. That's a lot of cars idling. One thing to just throw out there, I don't know if this would help some of the farmers. I noticed on Laredo Highway there's a row of oleanders that separates the road from the trees, and also on Highway 33 north of Laredo Highway there's a bunch of pine trees. Would programs like those help here in town by roadways or schools to help with the dust and pesticides? Can we offer those types of things to farmers to help out?
Absolutely. So I'll start with your last point. So we do have a measure in the SERP, which Jess is going to talk about in a little bit, which is vegetative barriers, and we'll be working to source state funding for vegetative barriers for projects exactly like that. So oleander shrubs are a really great example of a really effective vegetative barrier that helps to mitigate some of those emissions. To your point about roundabouts, that is something we've heard suggestions about already, and I think that's a really something we'll be working with Kern County and the city to investigate. That's a great suggestion. And then to your point about the homes on Tulare, thank you for that. That's really great insight. And also, I think that might be a really good kind of source for our indoor air quality measure. We could look at helping those homes with some weatherization and other filtration type programs. So thank you.
I wanted to comment back to the gentleman talking about the annual notification list, and maybe for DPR's sense, that it's not worth nothing having the annual notification list. It's just a list, and even our ag commissioner told us that it sucks because it does not tell you the exact time, location, or anything, the dates, nothing at all. It's just a list provided from the grower of restricted material. And plus, because of the annual notification, they're allowed to spray or put any application from 6 in the afternoon to 6 in the morning, which a lot of the activities for, like, sports and activities, outdoor activities, happen in the afternoons because of the heat and after school. And a lot of the daycares start off really early for farm workers, as early as 5 in the morning. So there's an hour of our kids being exposed to pesticides, and yet not even DPR or the Ag Commissioner are doing nothing for them.
So one thing I wanted to add on that, and as you are aware, but maybe not other people here are not, is that the notification, the school notification program essentially allows for a third-party agreement between the school and the land applicators, the growers within that quarter mile to come up to an agreement on if the school knows that there's going to be some activities that are happening after hours. They can work with basically the County Agriculture Commissioner as well as the growers to schedule activities where they know that nobody's going to be in the school. So it does provide at least the opportunity for that to happen. How effective that is or whether that's been taking place, it all depends on county to county, but it does allow for that.
Yeah, and our Ag Commissioner straight up told us that if it's not recommended by DPR, he's not going to enforce it. So it's just an FYI what our Ag Commissioner has stated with the community meetings that he doesn't, if DPR does not enforce it, he's not going to bring it to the county. Another thing I wanted to bring up is about the NOIs. It was brought up into the SERPs, having those public. There's money allocated, but yet there's nothing reinforcing the notice of intent from the Ag Commissioner making them public. It's not costing him anything. It's just notifying what's happening in the community, and we wanted to see that happen. So that question is up to you.
So essentially the notification system that we're basically going to explore in this area hasn't been developed. Essentially, we have several pilots that are in Monterey County that they have a notification system around schools for fumigants. That could be explored to see if it works in this area. There's also the school notification as what you guys are asking in this area. It's a little bit different, like you said. It's only once a year, and it basically gives a list of all pesticides that can be applied, not what's actually being applied. So I think what DPR is committing here is to explore along with the committee, the Kern County Agriculture Commissioner, as well with all partners that we have here, to explore what works for you. In other words, what's out there right now may not be the solution. So that's one of the things that I think the scope of the notification system needs to be worked out, as well as how easily it is to implement in the area, and with what partners can we work with. It may include making the NOIs public. Again, that's something that we need to work out with the Kern County Agriculture Commissioner Office.
But the problem with having that NOI public, he's been very
I can't speak for what DPR would do at that level. I think we definitely have a relationship with all the county agriculture commissioners. So there's also a county agriculture commissioner commission that oversees it, and it's basically their, I don't know what the word would be, but basically it's a way in which you could actually communicate with all the kind of the CACs across the state. So that may be a conversation for that group as well to make sure that, again, you know, they're communicating with one another. But I think definitely we have partners in the area, and the Kern County CAC is one of those. So I think we will definitely have conversations. Hopefully everybody comes with an open mind to the table, and then, again, we find something that works better for the community. That, again, I can't speak to that because they haven't been planned, but I'm sure if they're not, the community will be informed. Ideally, there'll be somebody here that either the committee, that they're done here, or there's a representative from the community in those meetings.
Okay, I'm going to stop this real quick, even though I know this is critically important. I'm going to have Gustavo make a comment, and then I want to let Jessica finish the last super, super fast additional measures, and then I will go back to the gentleman in the blue shirt and Bianca in the end, but I do want to make sure that we do the final slides. So, yes.
Sure. Thank you. I just want to express our gratitude for the new L25 for bike lanes. Oftentimes, our youth are overlooked in all these plans, and I think that providing new bike lanes would encourage youth to get more active. On the funding for roads, again, thank you. A lot of gratitude there, and I think a lot more funding needs to be allocated, and also like unrestricting these funds to be able to be used, in these communities that are most needed is very important. And I just really want to really quick read a statement that was sent to me by Dora, and I could send it over to you guys, but she, for medical reasons, really isn't able to attend as much as she hopes. She's the representative for the Mexican colony. And she just stated, among other things, I wanted to request funding for street sweeping in the colony. We can't afford continuous increases on our property taxes or forming new CSAs. Also, we need vegetation barriers and expansion of our roads leading to the colony to include bike and walking lanes. I'm hoping that funding for sidewalks will be included for the colony.
Awesome, thank you. Okay, Jessica? All right. Well, if you will oblige me for hopefully five more minutes, a couple of things. First, a lot of you have cake right now, and that really is a celebration and a thank you. I think I saw, even though there were some little bit of question marks when it came to some of these, a lot of head nodding, a lot of the folks I think that were really excited to see road paving and sidewalks are very excited. There's a lot of funding in here that I think can benefit everyone. So that cake is really a thank you and a congratulations to you. The measures just went over were reflective of the new sort of updates we've made, but there are certainly tons, as you all know from the giant document we've gone over, of other measures that we've really gone through this iterative process on. They're wide-ranging. They include a number of land use measures. This is the CEQA, the sort of sustainable development measure, setbacks for oil and gas drilling that we've sort of addressed in some construction emissions measures. We've also addressed road dust, so that includes not only some of what Jess mentioned, a lot of the paving and other things that we can do to reduce road dust, but that does include some street sweeping and maybe working with the county, especially when it comes to Mexican Colony, because that's what that would be under, to evaluate the air quality impacts and feasibility of increasing frequency of street sweeping. We've also talked a lot about incentives measures, and these incentives, as a lot of you have pointed out, are for some maybe more business or industry, but a lot of the incentives you've noticed are really for residents, and that includes this measure, which will pay for 100% of your new electric lawn equipment, as well as a measure for commercial gardeners in the Shafter area and within that 7-mile boundary for their electric lawn equipment. We have a ton of education and outreach programs, and that's talk about access to provide funding for public fleet vehicles, to host tune-in, tune-up events, which was a lot of the discussion sort of at the beginning of this whole SERP process. Increased educational measures that will really support that main big measure that Jess talked about with that increased funding for a lot of those EVs. That includes training for mechanics. And a lot of the residential stuff includes that wood-burning measure. So this includes enhanced incentives to replace wood burning exclusively with natural gas and electric in the community, and educating the public about the harmful effects of burning wood. We also have a number of measures for outreach that include educating the public on those harmful effects and illegal activities. So that includes this reducing open burning, that might be trash burning, maybe in a burn barrel. We've talked about that a lot. We also have a number of those heavy-duty measures, and so this would target not only a lot of the stuff that Jess talked about, but enhancing the enforcement of the statewide regulations, incentives programs for dial-a-ride buses in and around the city of Shafter, as well as something Linda mentioned, we still do have the heavy-duty HD8 support the planning and development of at least one clean fueling infrastructure project. So that is still in there, just so that everyone's aware. As well as HD9, and HD9 is that heavy-duty truck rerouting. We have sort of a goal of working with the city of Shafter, and they have committed to evaluating truck rerouting as a part of the development of the environmental justice part of their general plan. So that's still a measure, and I know that was a main concern and something we still want to address with the committee working together kind of throughout this implementation on that one particular measure. We have five measures that are targeted at reducing emissions at a lot of the stationary sources, and that includes this pilot training program for conducting self-inspecting at gas stations, as well as providing incentives to install advanced control technology at a lot of the industrial sources in and around the city of Shafter. And there are a lot of strategies aimed at reducing emissions from ag sources, and that includes the low dust technology for nut harvesters, as well as a lot of the concern that we've heard as well would be the agricultural open burning. So we're still going to provide targeted incentives for alternatives to ag burning in the community, and the incentives for that is $1 million, which would target about 210 tons of direct PM2.5, which to a lot of the questions that have been coming out of the committee is a really significant direct PM2.5 reduction. Moving on, as you can see, again, there are a ton of ag measures. And the only reason I'm going through this quickly, if this is maybe your first meeting in a while, we have gone through these a lot, and so we're just kind of touching on some of the ones that haven't been updated in a while here. I just want to remind you, we have a lot of that increased outreach and education, and that includes the HAL, or Healthy Air Living Schools, increasing participation for that. And then another big thing, it was touched on a lot just now in the discussion, but we are still committing to providing incentives for installation of vegetative barriers, and that's around sources of concern. So that can include farms or dairies or the railroad tracks from the train, maybe large highways or freeways or maybe just dusty areas kind of near and around sensitive receptors in the city of Shafter. So that's still an ongoing commitment, which is VB1 in the SERP. We also have a lot of mitigation measures, and this is something that I want to touch on a little bit. This is to the point that Jess also made earlier of an indoor air quality measure. This is to partner with, there's a local group called CAPK, and they help support, and that's Community Action Partnership of Kern. They help support and administer state resources that help with weatherization. So that could be caulking around windows and doors. That could be replacing some of those older devices or maybe like an old heater or stove in the house. That can also be part of this measure, and that would just be to provide energy-efficient devices, perhaps even filters for a home. So a lot of that is encompassed, and again, this kind of just is part of our ongoing commitment to look for these other state resources and sort of leverage more funding. We have idling reduction strategies and protecting sensitive receptors, and then a lot of our outreach strategies. So that's continuing outreach in the community. Not only does this not stop because we will continue meeting, but we will also continue and maybe even increase a lot of how we message all of these measures out to the community. So that's part of O1. O2 is kind of a similar thing, talking about all of our incentives programs currently in the SERP and the incentives programs that we still administer as part of the district. And then O3 is the one I touched on a little bit earlier in response to John. That is our support for joint advocacy for continued finding of additional funding. That could be state resources or other resources we can continue to leverage and apply for as a community to say, hey, we're in a 617 community. How can we make sure we rise to the top of some of these grant funding applications? And so finally, I wanted to touch on kind of before we go to timeline and next steps, one final thing. We've been talking about it a lot, but I just wanted to reiterate that this SERP really serves as a framework and sort of a roadmap for where we go from here. So we have a lot of the details in there, and I know it seems like we've gone back and forth on those nitty-gritty details, but in reality, a lot of this is really just sort of giving us direction on where we're going to go from here. So one of the main sort of comments we've received from a lot of members of the community is having an ongoing implementation, and that is certainly our goal. So we're going to continue to meet as a committee. It won't be every other week, so for those of you who are, you know, looking forward to having some of your evenings back, but we still will be in as much communication as possible with you. And a lot of that is to develop and answer all of these questions. A lot of you have been giving us really, really great feedback on people we can partner with and things we can keep in mind when we apply for these funding amounts or maybe even develop guidelines for some of these programs. All of that is so necessary, and we need you for all of that. So that's why it's so important that this is, like I said, sort of the end of phase one, beginning of phase two. We will certainly be continuing to meet with CARB and developing all of these, and really sort of the next step here as I move on to our timeline is, obviously this is today, this is to sort of review those final SERP measures. Thursday is when we'll be publishing. It says September 13th, so it could be as late as maybe early on Friday morning to publish this final SERP. So it's really just kind of documenting everything that we've touched on today. The following Thursday is our governing board meeting, and that's where we will adopt the proposed SERPs for this community and for actually the South Central Fresno community. So if you do attend, it will be for both. And then October, November, and something I'll actually bring Karen up here to kind of touch on a little bit too, is sort of ongoing involvement from CARB, because they need to have their board adopt our SERP, and the idea is to have that happen in February. So I'll let Karen provide a little bit more detail on that.
Thanks, Jessica. And I think we talked about this perhaps a little bit at the last steering committee meeting. So there are a lot of additional steps still to come. So we actually will be bringing our board down to Shafter in February, because we thought it was really critical, I mean, really at the heart of AB 617, for them to come to the local communities and be able to hear directly from you about the program. As an intermediate step for that, we'll actually be co-hosting a community steering committee with the district as a further chance to just talk together and understand your perspectives, learn from all the progress that has been made so far. And I think I really just wanted to continue to underscore that this is not an end, this is really a beginning, because it's implementation that really brings all of your ideas to life. And that's why we also felt it was so critical that we put in the blueprint that the steering committees continue to live and continue to meet and work with all of us to actually implement the program.
Thanks, Karen. Okay, we have about, let's call it eight, nine minutes left. I know I cut off two people, but I want to ask if there's any final thoughts or reactions from anyone who hasn't yet made a comment.
Hi, my name is Wayne Clausen, and I was thinking of the implementation, and I know you guys have been working on this like 24/7. You got to be pooped. But I mean, February is a long time away, and I was wondering if it was possible if Air District staff and this committee could get together and pick 3 to 5 of the big ticket items and begin planning to pursue their immediate implementation upon CARB's approval of this plan. I mean, we can't attack the whole thing at once, but obviously we should look at getting a couple of programs going right off the, and have Air District staff help the committee, and committee help Air District staff pick what those priority programs should be.
I think that's a really great idea. So we do, in the SERP itself, there's a, under each of the measures, there's a timing kind of informational bar. Some of the measures are pretty easy to start implementing. And so immediately upon our district governing board approval, we're going to be going out in the Shafter community and actually kickstarting those programs. So we do have some that just because the program guidelines are already established and we're able to implement them right away, we're going to be kickstarting those immediately. But I think that's a really great idea, kind of close to our governing board's adoption of the SERP. Maybe one of our next steering committee meetings can really focus on prioritizing measures and seeing what our next steps are moving forward. Thanks for that suggestion.
Great. I see you, Tom. I just want to mention, speaking of the governing board adoption of the SERP, I've asked two members of the steering committee to come and make a short presentation on the 19th of September, representing the different views, both the business and the advocacy points of view, to speak to their experiences on this committee. I've tapped Gustavo and John. If you have any concerns about that, please come to me. Otherwise, obviously, everybody on the steering committee is welcome to come and make comments and participate and feed, you know, share your thoughts. I'm going to go Tom, Sal. Wait, Mark hasn't spoken yet. Hold on, Tom. I'm going to go to Mark because he hasn't said anything yet.
I don't know who was involved with the funding for the road paving and the sidewalks and stuff, but you guys need to be commended for this. This is great. And keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
Okay. Anyone who has not shared a thought? Aha. See? If you ask long enough.
Hello, my name is Anna. I'm with the Central California Asthma Collaborative. I did just have a few points that I wanted to make. So I wanted to make sure that there's incentive funding to also include the amount of PM2.5 and other pollutants that are reduced. and that all SERP commitments need to include the amount of pollution reduced and any rules that enforce it.
Thanks, Anna. Okay. I know we're coming to the close. We have 5 minutes. I'm going to go here. Hold on. So, okay, I'm going to go 1, 2, 3, 4. I think this is the order of people. Oh, and John, 5. People I've cut off. Okay. We're going to go fast.
Trying to go fast. Air conditioning works quite well. Why do we? I don't know if this is within the purview, but I'll just throw it out. And if it's not something that can be done, fine. But under the new state pesticides commitments, Measure 8.10, I'm kind of glad it's there. It does say they're committed to ongoing expanded monitoring. So this is the thought. It's almost the end of the year. I don't see any people from the school district here. And I just heard that the state website, supposedly that has information regarding that new DPR rule, is not very transparent. Information is lacking, which is unfortunate. So that means there's no way to know what's going on, whether or not the school districts have been notified within who have had spray within 1/4 mile of their boundary. This is the thought, suggestion. You can do an historical record research and find out what's going on. The state of California has a robust database. The pesticide use reports tells you the date it was sprayed, the time it ended, it tells you the pounds, whether it's how much AI, and it tells you whether it's, you know, caution, warning, danger. All that information is there, the crop. And you can verify by just simply determining where are the schools and where are the parcels within 1/4 mile, and you basically match that with the database, which will probably be available for public review in 2019. And you just simply determine whether or not that information was, if there were schools that met or did not meet that criteria. And if they were not, just verify with the schools, were they informed? And Edgar's right. It's a partnership between the school and the applicator, whether the farmer or landlord. And if it's not complied with, then it's between the school and them to work that out. But it would be nice to know. And if that information could be shared with the research folks here or the committee and the school district, it would be great. And if it needs to be paid for, maybe there's some funds available for that. That's my suggestion.
One of the comments that I wanted to talk about was the tarping of T-lone. I know that in the Bay Area, like the coastal area, they tarp T-lone, but in the Shafter area, being a neurotoxic contaminant, it's not being tarped. So what would, how would the DPR or the Air District would work together to make that as one of the service measures? And a lot of the question for the annual notification list, it is a public request that we could do for the Ag Commissioner, and he's willing to provide it, but essentially he's told us straight out that it's not worth nothing. So I just wanted to make that. I'm sorry. But
my understanding is we're not adding new measures today, but that's a reason to stay engaged and continuing the conversation.
Tarping? I don't think that maybe it was saying that was one of the suggestions.
Yeah, I think that was a suggestion, maybe part of the comments and responses type thing you might have seen on a slide. We did hear directly from the steering committee that was a suggestion. But I think through the implementation of A10, and as we have continued discussions with DPR and CARB, that might be a specific suggestion we can address and at least get a response from DPR about how that'll work going forward.
Okay, I just want to say the most recent proposals that came from, that Gustavo sent in, that came from 12 of the steering committee members, you responded to those, but it's not adequate. You know, we asked for an extra $1 million, $750,000, specifically for electric appliances, heating. And you're saying, well, we're going to put the program there, but we're going to take the money out of the solar money for solar. So that's not adequate to us. We need more money specifically for that. Second, urban greening, we asked for $250,000 specifically So the city of Shafter can maintain the trees that will be obtained with other funding and planted with other funding, because we know there's other money there. We want money specifically for the city of Shafter to maintain the newly planted trees for at least 5 years. That was $250,000, and you're committing $50,000 out of the SERP funding, the way I read this. So the million we asked for, I just want to make it clear that you did commit sort of to some of that, but you really only committed $50,000, and that's not satisfactory.
And I think Tom's underscoring the point that I don't think anyone loves 100% of the stuff in here, but I'm guessing that there's something in here that is helpful for everyone, even if it's not everything. Okay, it went Sal, and then John, and then Gustavo, and then I really will cut this off.
Several people have brought up about road improvements, and Linda talked about it. You mentioned roundabouts. Gustavo, you talked about road improvements. The COG is looking for an opportunity to work with the Valley Air Board and the city of Shafter to improve the Los Angeles intersection with 43 and the 7 Standard intersection. So there are opportunities for collaboration right now to make things better right here. So let's go.
Thanks, Sal. Okay, John, real quick.
Real quick, I know this isn't a monitoring meeting, but actually that's really important to me, especially as we get the monitoring program up. I'd like to know where we are today, and after we spend all this money, how much good we did.
I can quickly say we are about to, probably just because of the crunch time with the SERP, we haven't focused so much on it, but based on last time's meeting when we had a lot of monitoring discussion, we'll be sending out an update in terms of where we are, but I will tell you that based on those sort of priority locations we identified last time, we are working with and have already been in contact with a number of different people in Mexican Colony, near the farm labor camp, and other places that were priorities to help try to establish how we can get agreements going.
Yeah, my question was actually just that, John. How does this timeline wrap up with the community air monitoring plan as well, and will it be adopted the same date and all that good stuff?
So something we've gone over before, but I'll just kind of reiterate, that air monitoring plan is totally a living document, and it is not something that's adopted by our board or the CARB board. So that is something that we work on with the steering committee in order to just sort of outline how we're conducting the air monitoring. And again, we will be sending out an updated camp, probably first sending out maybe just a draft update similar to how we've sent out those SERP updates that were more insert documents, just to kind of let you know who we're in contact with. Definitely come chat with me if you want at the end of this meeting, and I can tell you exactly who we've been talking to. But again, we've reached out to a business, La Gardena, perhaps, in Mexican Colony. I think that's the name of the building there. And like I said, the farm labor camp, which was sort of that one of the main areas folks wanted the trailer placed. We've also been working with a lot of the schools that were identified as well.
Okay, we're coming up just past 7:15, and I want to honor and respect your time. But before we do, just one thing. I do a lot of community meetings, and it is super exciting to see the amount of passion and interest that's still in this room. So please come back for the October 21st meeting, which is the next steering committee meeting. And Jamie just whispered in my ear that they may be bringing the mobile van for you to check out, which is always fun. But yes, this is a major milestone, but we're not done, and the next phase is really where the action happens. So September 19th is the governing board where the SERP gets adopted. October 21st is the next meeting. In the meantime, congratulations. You're done with this first phase. Thank you so much.